Hello, everyone. I hope that you're having a great day. My name is Griffin Della Penna, and this is the GDP Podcast. For those of you who have followed my career somewhat to this point, you might remember for a very short amount of time, a few years ago, I actually did do this podcast. It was during my sophomore year at Canisius University, right after COVID, and there were really not a lot of ways that I could get sports broadcasting experience and opportunities because there weren't internships. I wasn't really allowed to do a whole lot on campus in terms of live broadcast. So I thought to myself, podcasting would be a way to get experience. And it was, because I saw myself become a better interviewer. And I've even now looking 5 years in the future, I do feel like that is one of my strengths overall in this industry. And I believe that's because there's a level of curiosity that I have in every single interview that I do, even dating back to those 5 or 6 episodes, I don't even know how many it was, when I did talk to college athletes and coaches and reporters and broadcasters and people in, you know, the sports or media landscape. And that's what we'll continue to do here. And we'll get into a little bit of the structure and how it will work. But that's something that I still have now, is that level of curiosity and how somebody has a dream, has a passion, and they face adversity, they come out on the other side of it, and they become incredibly successful. Because in this show, and this shouldn't come to a surprise, regardless if you put two athletes next to one another and how they could be both professionals or in college, whatever, their trajectory to get to that point is entirely different. And I've really realized that in my own profession, for talking to people who do broadcast at the highest level or are with professional sports teams and ways that I want to get in my own career, I talk to them and they're all across the map. And I find that fascinating. And that's something that we'll discuss a lot in this podcast. But you might be thinking to yourself, why do you want to do this if 5 years ago you started it and you didn't stick with it? And honestly, that's something that I wish that I did. And it's a very valid question overall. And I think it boils down to two different reasons. The first being that me doing this podcast is experience. It's a way for me to continue to get my skills better, not just in interviewing, but as an entire broadcaster. Being able to talk off the cuff like I am right now, that is incredibly invaluable. And it's another way for me to get my name out there. This is a very, very competitive industry, one that I probably underestimated to a certain extent. And as I want to continue to elevate myself, I have no idea what to expect with this podcast. But if it could somewhat turn into something, that could make me more marketable in an industry that is going more towards social media and not towards traditional broadcast anymore on TV. So that's number one. Number two is I thoroughly enjoy this. I remember those times I was so excited. I remember the nerves before talking to certain people. And I want that again. You know, I do interview people a lot in my current day-to-day job or as a freelancer with different professional teams and organizations. But I feel like there's still something that's left on the table. There's more that I could be doing in my own professional life that could, one, help me get better, but two, it's just going to make me happier as I've reflected and thought about this past year in my life and what it's kind of meant to me after school. And, you know, we'll kind of discuss my journey here in this episode in just a little bit, but I faced a lot of stuff in my career, adversity that way, mentally, physically, and that all is something that I find important. I hope that you guys also, as a listener or a viewer here on YouTube, find impactful and find empowering. And if that could mean something in your own life, that you hear somebody who dealt through something that could be what you're experiencing now or just a very difficult time and come out on the other side of that. I feel like that is ultimately what I want to do in this show. Not talking about, you know, what the Bills did on Sunday and breaking down that game. No, I want to talk about people in this show. So that's honestly what we are going to do. And in this first episode, we're going to talk about my own personal journey. Mentioned this past year, how there's been a lot going on with that, that I don't necessarily put out there on social media because maybe there was a little bit of hesitancy to be that vulnerable, but I do find a lot of power in even for me to get this stuff off my chest, for me to feel a little bit better, because I'm incredibly hard on myself and, you know, thought that I would be at the top of the industry already at, I just turned 24 years old. So maybe this can help also me put my life into perspective of, wow, I've came so far already in my career, but also in my life. And I think this will also be an avenue for other athletes and coaches. And maybe you'll see a different side of them in this podcast. So again, I have no idea what to expect with this. In this episode, I'm not going to, you know, give you a laundry list of my entire career journey, but I'll kind of give you the spark notes, and you'll hear that in just a minute. So thank you for listening here today. Well, that was a lot, even for me to talk off the cuff like that. So if you're still listening, I really do appreciate it. And I promise in the future that you won't have to hear my voice as much as you are hearing it right now. I am asked a lot, when did you know that you wanted to be a sports broadcaster? And some people honestly don't believe me when I say since I was 6 years old. But I was running downstairs on a weekend morning. My dad was already watching TV. And he was flipping through the channels and landed on SportsCenter. That was the first time that I ever saw it. And I was truly amazed because at some point during when I was watching, it just clicked to me that that was a job, that you could wear a cool suit, be behind a desk, and you talked about sports. And I found that fascinating. And even if you went back and looked at my elementary school papers that asked what I wanted to be when I grew up, it was being a sports broadcaster. But in high school, I went to a smaller school. There weren't necessarily opportunities for me to get experience when I was in school, but I also played, when I started high school, 3 sports and went down to 1, but I was just incredibly busy with playing sports, not necessarily at that point in my life thinking, oh, I'm going to put sports aside, playing them, and just focus on my career. I didn't want to do that, but I also didn't have the chance to. So when I started to look at schools, there were 2 that really jumped out to me. One was Syracuse University. I knew about it. It was right down the road. A lot of the best sports broadcasters in the industry went there, and I was going to put away potentially like playing baseball in college to just go there as a student and get the best education that I could. The other place was Canisius University, where I ultimately went for undergrad. And the reason why it was so enticing to me was because it was close to home. I've been around it literally my entire life. My name is Griffin because my parents met there and their mascot's the Golden Griffins. So some do kind of call it destiny, but I was never pushed to go there by any means. And it was an opportunity for me to get experience from day one at a small school that had a somewhat up and coming sports broadcast program in terms of getting experience on our ESPN Plus broadcasts. And it was in a pro sports market. So it checked a lot of those boxes. And when I first got there, had the, you know, almost opportunity to walk on the team and be with baseball. So that's, to me, was like, wow, I have the best of both worlds. That's why I went there. My freshman year, I focused on baseball. I was the bullpen catcher. I had a opportunity to walk on the team after some injuries. A lot of stuff happened with an NCAA waiver, and because I was somewhat considered like a manager and they thought I was getting paid, that then I didn't have eligibility just at Canisius. I could have transferred anywhere else in the country. Finally got my eligibility back, but realized like my heart wasn't in baseball. So I stuck around. I, you know, got paid at the end of the day to be a bullpen catcher and do like scouting and analytics. So my freshman year, I just kind of focused on that. And then once COVID happened, like I mentioned in the intro, there wasn't really a whole lot that I could do because there weren't internships. We had remote broadcasts for the most part. So it was my junior year when I kind of put baseball aside and thought to myself, why don't I get as much experience as I can right now while I'm in school that will set me up post-school? And, you know, maybe those first few years aren't as much of a struggle, because I knew, like, even growing up, my parents told me that this industry is not for the weak. Like, you're going to have to probably move around. It's going to be very difficult, but it's what I've always wanted to do. So that's ultimately what I did. But then in the summer, entering my junior year, I had my first true experience in the industry, and it was with my hometown Batavia Muck Dogs. who for my entire life were affiliated with minor league baseball. They were a short season single A team in the New York Penn League, which is the bottom of the bottom of minor league baseball. But because of COVID, they were no longer affiliated with Major League Baseball. They were now going to be a summer league wooden bat team in the Perfect Game League that was under new ownership from CanUSA Sports and Robbie Nichols. When I knew that that was happening, I was like, oh my goodness, I could like be the broadcaster for the Muck Dogs. I was actually a bat boy for them a little bit in high school. And it was a potential opportunity for me that I could get experience and I could be close to home. It would just be right. So I called them up. I called Mark Witt, the general manager, and honestly just pled my case on why I wanted to do it. And at the end of a 40-minute phone call, he told me, you'll be doing all of our broadcasts, all of our social media, one-man band. And it was great on their part as well, because now in a very small community like Batavia, New York, people knew who I was. So it was an ultimate selling point that, hey, we can sell more tickets because Griffin Della Penna is our broadcaster. And two of my friends growing up, Jerry Reinhart and Tyler Prospero, shout out to both of you, were playing on the team. So it was just very smart on their part. But it was a great summer. I broadcasted home and road games. I think there was like 50 games almost every single day. It was such a grind, but I got so much better towards the end because I just had the keys to literally do whatever I wanted. I ran all of our social media accounts. I sold sponsorships. I cleaned the dugouts. Like, I had a full encompassing experience, not just in broadcast, but also just like how sports teams kind of operated. But then going into my junior year, I then got connected with the Buffalo Sabres, and it was the first time since COVID that they were going to bring back interns. So at Pegula Sports and Entertainment, they are like the managing group of the Bills and the Sabres. They're no longer, but at the time, that's what they were. And I became a media and content intern that was kind of strictly with the Buffalo Sabres and the Buffalo Bandits Indoor Lacrosse League team. And that was, again, just another amazing experience for me to understand how now pro sports operated. And in the first half of the internship, I did rounds. So I would, with 1 week, be with social media. And then the next week, I would be with the broadcast team. And the next week, I would be with the writers and get experience with them. And then with the video editors. And it was really cool for me to then be like, oh, wow, I like this. I could see myself doing that. I'm not really a huge fan of this area. But by the end of it, I realized, wow, I really like to write. Like, I was a team reporter for the Buffalo Sabres at like 19 years old, 20 years old. Like, it was crazy. And also with the Bandits, and, you know, they went to the NLL championship and I was our main reporter for that. But also I sat in the first row at almost every single Sabres game near the glass taking videos for Instagram. Like, it was just crazy that I had this experience. Not to mention, I was paid as a junior. It really wasn't like a ton of money, but to me, it felt like $10,000 every single week. And that was awesome. It was an amazing experience with the Sabres. And then I also started to broadcast more at Canisius, calling games for all of our different teams, and specifically with baseball, which was so cool because I'm calling the games for like all of my best friends and roommates at the time. And I don't think there's many people who can honestly say that at any point in their lives. So it was a really unique experience in my junior year. So then entering my senior year at Canisius, it was the first time that I experienced somewhat of heartbreak or just a roadblock, because previously I was just kind of going up like this and taking every opportunity that I could. And it was a great steady progression. I wanted to apply for a position then with the Bills where I was going to be like a seasonal writer with them. Unfortunately, I didn't get that due to things that were completely out of my control. And I kind of banked on it because all of my Sabres people talked to the Bills ones and I thought that I was going to get that position. So I didn't really apply for anything else going into my senior year. So when I found out that I didn't get it, I was distraught. I was extremely upset. I was mad at myself that I just thought that it was just going to be so easy to continue to find opportunities. And that was a big wake-up call for me. So I thought to myself, if I was just with the Sabres and now I'm doing nothing as a senior, like, that's a red flag. And I thought, okay, well, I see what's going on at Canisius right now in the athletic department. And if I look at content from other mid-major schools from across the country, or even other programs that are in the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, their conference, that we're kind of getting passed by with some of our coverage. So it was a very mutual beneficial thing. I was actually on a flight to Denver, Colorado for my 21st birthday with my family, and I wrote out an entire content plan, taking everything that I learned with the Sabres and then wanted to apply it with Canisius and be the face of our coverage, regardless if it was on social media, coming up with original content series, or on our broadcasts. And thankfully, my boss, Matt Reitenauer, he agreed. It was great for him as well to have, you know, somebody in the building. And even though I was still in undergrad, I was essentially like an employee. I wasn't a GA. They couldn't get me like a master's degree because I was still in undergrad. But I worked for our athletic department and almost full time as well, because I had like two classes my senior year. I don't even know how it worked, but that's what I did. So I did over 100 ESPN broadcasts, doing play by play, doing sideline reporting or studio hosting, but also was able to talk to alumni in my Griffin Report podcast or in around Canisius Athletics, where I felt it was very important to have not just men's basketball, women's basketball, and hockey talked about every single week, but also some of our more, you know, niche, if you will, Olympic sports. So I created a series called Around Canisius Athletics, where in under 2 minutes and 20 seconds, I had to recap everything that went on the week before for the sports that were in action and also preview that upcoming week. And I had a lot of fun with it. It was very creative for me. And my time there, my senior year, was just so much fun. Like every single day, I was like, what can I do next? It was awesome for me to have that relationship with all of our student athletes that were the same age as me, but I was covering them and also very close with a lot of them too. So it was really, really unique. And once graduation started to approach, I thought to myself, what am I going to do next? And I thought back to when I was entering college and when Syracuse University ultimately waitlisted me. And I did not get immediately into the broadcast and digital journalism program because I didn't have previous experience in high school. So honestly, as a personal spite to be like, wow, look at what you guys missed out on, trying to prove them wrong in a sense, I started to see people on my timeline on Twitter that were grad students at Syracuse. So I thought to myself, I might as well just apply. Like, I could then almost use that as motivation moving forward. I use it as motivation, certainly, throughout my time at Canisius, and be like, wow, kind of like a told you so moment that I'll apply to your program. I always thought about going to grad school as a possibility, maybe down the road, because I wanted a master's degree. But I wasn't like dead set on needing to continue my education after I was done at Canisius. So I ended up applying and I got in. And it was a very rewarding experience. I was at the MAC Basketball Championships in Atlantic City. And I remember just feeling so proud of myself, of being like, wow, you know, I actually even wrote about it in my essay of like how I used that rejection as motivation to be the best sports broadcaster that I could and take coverage at Canisius to an area that it was never before. So that was a very rewarding experience for me. All right, so I apologize for breaking this up. It is honestly much harder than I probably anticipated to talk this long-winded and make sure that I have all of my facts straight for the timeline. But once I got accepted into Syracuse, I wanted to go see campus. They invited me for an accepted students day. And quickly, I realized that I would be an absolute fool if I didn't have this be my next step in my journey. And the reason why was because there were going to be people in my corner who could take my skill set to the next level. My education at Canisius was fantastic. It was a great print journalism program, but I didn't have professors really who spent decades in the industry in terms of broadcast. I didn't have professors like that. So a lot of my experience up to that point was more self-taught. I mentioned it with the Muck Dogs internship, but at Canisius, it was the same thing too. I was just thrown into the fire. I was learning on the fly. And I would reach out to people and try to connect with other broadcasters and look for feedback or watch games, and also then try to take bits and pieces of people that I emulated and have that be my own style. But I felt like I was leaving a little bit on the table. And at a place like Syracuse, who has professors like that in almost every area, in local news and reporting that way and being a better storyteller and my on-air presence and pacing in my voice, like there were so many different areas that I didn't necessarily really even know about because that wasn't a part of my undergrad education that now I would be getting at Syracuse. So that's what I decided to do. It was a short program in terms of you take a 2-year master's program and consolidate it into 13 months. So I graduated at the end of May in 2023 from Canisius, had June off, and then 4th of July weekend, I started my master's degree, and it was so fast-paced. It was incredible the amount of learning that I did in that short amount of time. But it was very vital to me to make the most out of my experience because it was in such a short amount of time that I immediately reached out to Matt Park, who is the voice of the Orange, but then also in charge of what students are able to get broadcast, because it's incredibly competitive to get on-air reps, specifically on the TV side of things. Up at that point, I've never been on radio before, and that's kind of the usual progression for students, is that they start at the bottom, they have to work their way up to get on-air reps as an undergrad from their freshman to their senior year. So now I'm kind of coming around from like the back door and now almost getting opportunities, and that could have, you know, rubbed people the wrong way. Thankfully, I don't think it really did, because I proved from day one that I can do this. You know, like I've had experience in my undergrad, and thankfully they trusted me. So early on in the fall, I started to broadcast Syracuse volleyball games and was our main play-by-play broadcaster for that. And that certainly molded as the year went on, from doing women's basketball games, being able to be a studio host, something that I never really did at that magnitude before for, you know, the largest in terms of student-run productions in the country that had a pregame show, a halftime show, and a postgame show. And that was, again, something that I didn't have previously up until that point. So now I'm getting to be a studio host for ranked teams in the country for men's and women's lacrosse and men's basketball and women's basketball, and getting to also do play-by-play for those games. It was incredibly rewarding and an experience that, again, I think took my skill set to the next level. So shout out to Professor Olivia Stomsky, who is still always in my corner. And that's another reason why I loved my time at Syracuse, because they're people that genuinely care and they wanted what's best for me, and they recognized how dedicated I was to this industry, and that they wanted to do whatever they possibly could to, again, help me get to that next level. And because of the structure of the program and how it is a little bit different, I walked in May of 2024, but I didn't get my diploma, and we still had all of summer to fulfill our requirement for our master's degree. So we had class on campus for the first 6 weeks, and then we went out and had our capstones. And for my capstone, I was selected to go cover NFL training camp, and there were 6 different markets across the country that we were paired up with local TV stations and got to be an everyday reporter at that team's training camp. So when I sat back and we got to list like which ones we wanted to go to, even though I grew up a Bills fan, New England was one of the options in going to cover the Patriots. And the reason why I did that is because they had great storylines overall. Bill Belichick was not there anymore. They had a rookie quarterback. It was a team that has had so many winning seasons, and the standard is the standard, winning Super Bowls, and they were not very good. So I found that pretty interesting. But it was also a great media market that was, I think, the highest of any of the other six that I got to choose from. But it also was a city that I would love to live in someday and be in the New England area because their sports coverage, I think, is amazing. So that's what I did for 6 weeks. I was paired up with a TV station in Providence, Rhode Island, WPRI. And for those 6 weeks, I just tried to do as much as I possibly could. I made TV packages each and every day that sometimes they were aired, sometimes they weren't, but it was still just great practice to be able to see what was going on the field, know the big storyline, and then take it from there. Some of my favorite moments were being able to have a joint practice with the Philadelphia Eagles, who eventually won the Super Bowl, and to be around a lot of those guys and ask them questions and be in the media scrums. And everybody knew that I was somewhat of an intern and that I was just finishing my college degree. But by the end, I felt like I'd built up a level of respect with all of them because I wasn't afraid to ask questions or to put myself out there for a potential rejection from PR because I wanted to do a sit down one-on-one with a different player. So that was a really unique experience. And towards the end of it, then I'm thinking to myself, all right, I'm ready to go. Like I want to start my career, and was deep in the job hunt towards the end of training camp. However, throughout that summer, I was dealing with pretty bad back pain, and it wasn't common for me to feel that. I'm a big golfer now and didn't even bring my clubs because I golfed a few times earlier before I left for New England. And it was just really bad. So it kept getting worse throughout the summer. And I just thought, okay, I'm in an Airbnb for these 6 weeks. Like maybe I just don't have a good bed, whatever. Fast forward to this time last year, it was right around Labor Day. And unfortunately, I was riding my bike and got caught in a rainstorm. And in that rainstorm, I had a terrible wipeout. My tire went right out underneath me when I was taking a turn, going pretty fast. And I hit the deck hard, bleeding everywhere in my legs. And at that point in time, I had pain that was now times 10, like terrible pain going all the way down my left leg and my back completely locked up. So at that point, I'm like, there's something wrong here. Had to get rushed to the ER. They just gave me pills. It kind of helped mask the pain for a little bit. But then later that week, I woke up in the middle of my sleep and I legitimately could not move my left side. Like it was almost paralyzing and my body was shaking. I was, again, in immense pain that would radiate down my whole side. And I was very, very scared. Later on, I could not sleep for days on end because I couldn't stand still. I couldn't sit. I couldn't lay down. The only time where I was not in pain is if I was up and walking. So at that point in time, I had some potential job offers that were on the table, but wanted to give myself at least a month or two, because this was now going to be the only time in my life where I get to take a deep breath. I worked so hard at my time at Canisius, I didn't really have any break, and then did legitimately everything I could at Syracuse. So I felt like I was giving myself at least a little bit of time to regroup before I started my career. The only problem with that was is I was not relaxing at all because I was in terrible pain that honestly was killing my quality of life. And after going to the ER multiple times, I realized that there was something that was very, very wrong, but we weren't getting answers. So it was incredibly frustrating not knowing what was wrong with me. And I knew at 23 years old, like something's up. This is not normal. Ultimately, after a very long process, I finally got a back MRI at an orthopedic in Buffalo, which I could barely sit still for. It was horrendous pain to be laying flat for that long after I couldn't lay flat for like 45 seconds. Then I had to be in a machine and do it for 40. But when we got the results back, they were very vague and essentially told me that, hey, we know that you go to Roswell Park Cancer Institute because when I was younger, I had leukemia, type of blood cancer, and I will go to Roswell for the rest of my life for regular routine checkups just to make sure that cancer will never come back. And what they told me was, is we kind of see something vague here. We don't really know what it is. So we would like you to go talk to neurology at Roswell. And at that point, I'm starting to freak out because I don't know if I have cancer again. Your mind just really starts to swirl. Thankfully, Roswell got me in quick, and I had to go in for more scans and more MRIs. And I'll never forget the day. It's going to be later this month on September 27th. I had a meeting with Dr. Lipinski, and my parents were there with me. And I just had a very, very bad feeling that there was something not right with me and how the doctors were interacting with me. And finally, we sat in a room that was about a 6x6 cube, and my parents were with me. I'm sitting on the table, and five doctors come in. And that's when I found out that I had a spinal tumor that was located in my spinal cord. Somehow, they didn't know how it got there. They didn't know how long it got there. And they thought that it's been building over time. And when I had my bike accident, that it got lodged in my spinal cord and was hitting nerves. So that's why I was having the terrible pain that I was, specifically down my left side, because it was hitting nerves. At any point during that entire sequence for nearly 4 weeks, I could have lost bodily function. I could have became paralyzed. Very, very scary stuff. But the first moment that I think about during this is, do I have cancer again? Like, what are we going to do? So they described to me where it's located towards, you know, the back of my lumbar spine and my thoracic spine at a very strange spot near the nerve bundle. And all these things probably mean nothing to you guys, but I'm just trying to explain how scary the situation was. And what they told me was, we need to get this removed immediately to see if it's cancerous, and we also need to check your brain and other parts of your body to see if there are more. And what their worry was is because when I was younger, for my leukemia treatment, you can develop tumors in your nervous system through chemotherapy. So they were very worried that there was a link from my cancer diagnosis to that. Which again raised a lot of red flags and then would make you ultimately think that it is cancer. So my doctor told me that it was a Friday. She said next Friday on the 4th, that's the soonest that we can do this and get this done. So I was like, okay, well, we have no other choice to get surgery. And I wasn't going to know if it was cancerous or not until after the procedure. And it was a very strange feeling knowing now, with something that's this large, I have to put my entire career on hold and focus on this new health journey that there are so many unknowns at a time in my life where I was so excited to start my life. I've worked so hard, so many years going into this, that now I just want to reap the benefits of that and start my career. And because I was so scared of the potential outcome, I didn't really put a whole lot of thought into what the rehab was going to look like from having a major back surgery like that. October 4th rolls around. I'm at Roswell. I feel great. This was going to be a very long and delicate procedure, being that it was my spinal cord. I had my whole family there with me. And after a 6-7 hour surgery, I came out of it, and that was the worst pain ever. It was horrendous, and that was going to be the road to recovery. I stayed at Roswell for about 5 days, and the first day, I had to lay completely flat for 24 straight hours. I could not move because they were worried after stitching up my spinal cord that if you lose any of that spinal cord fluid, that's not good. So then slowly but surely over those 5 days, I could change the angle. Luckily, the procedure went great. And on the fifth day that I was there, we got all the biopsies back, and thankfully I found out that I did not have cancer, which even talking about it now will always get me emotional, just because, that could have changed again the course of my life even more than what I was going to experience in this road to recovery. Luckily, I have an amazing support system that were going to be with me throughout it all. It did happen, looking back, at a great time, because there were jobs that I was applying for and was offered that were hundreds of miles away, very far away from home. And if I was by myself at that time, I don't know how I was going to get through that time, or just starting a job in general and having this major life alteration happen. And then potentially my job won't be there after that because it was going to be multiple months of recovery. Thankfully, then I came home and I was living with my parents, and they were my support system during that time, where every single day I made it apparent that I was going to beat the odds of this. I would go to PT 3 times a week. I had to relearn how to walk, how to get around my house. And I had a walker for over a week after that, 2 weeks. I probably should have had it longer, but I was determined to not have it. And throughout all of last fall, all I did with my time was go on walks, because what they told me was the earlier that you can strengthen all of those muscles, the better off you're going to be, that you are never going to have back issues for the rest of your life due to this injury. After a very extensive surgery and going through all of that pain and having to take a lot of medication to even function, I wanted to do whatever it took to get my quality of life back. Thankfully, my recovery was going good enough that I could start to call games again and be back out in the field. And that was something that I could look forward to, because so much of my time, I was just sitting in a house by myself, not able to move. I wasn't able to drive. And the mental strain that that took on me was something that I never felt in my life. And I can say right now, and being fully transparent, that was the first time in my life where I became incredibly depressed. And that is unfortunately something where I've had a lot of waves of that over this past year, and feeling very vulnerable and not understanding why certain things have happened to me. In early November, I had my first broadcast back that I was so looking forward to. It was a little over a month after I had my surgery, and I called a Canisius men's basketball game against St. Bonaventure, which is a great rivalry in general, but it also just means a lot to me because 2 years before that, I had my first ever men's college basketball call on ESPN for that same matchup, where Canisius had a crazy comeback and ultimately won in overtime. So it was just very meaningful on multiple different levels. And that then started my time with the Rochester Americans again, when their season continued to progress and we had TV broadcasts. That's something that I did the year previous, also with the Rochester Nighthawks of the NLL. So I was starting to freelance again and get myself back out there in a limited capacity, because coming back from those days, I was wiped out. Like, it is absurd how detrimental a surgery like that can be in your life. I never would have thought at 23, like, stretching would be as important as it was, and how difficult it would be sometimes to get out of bed or to try to tie your shoes. And that was something that I experienced for multiple months until the calendar turned to 2025 and I started to be cleared for more things. I was able to drive again. I was able to kind of get out of my house and start to experience life again. And that's when I started to look ultimately at potential full-time jobs and get back to doing what I loved. The unfortunate part was that there wasn't a whole lot of jobs open at that point in the year, at the end of January and February, when I started to make myself more available for full-time work. And that's because jobs in this industry are very cyclical. They follow the academic year or sports season. So there aren't positions that are open until the summertime or for the NBA and NFL later on in the year. So I was kind of stuck of, wow, I'm ready to go. I'm so eager. I'm determined to show what I can do. And I was facing, unfortunately, a very difficult job market. And in some of the positions that I was looking for and maybe told that I was going to get right here in Buffalo ultimately didn't come to fruition. So it was then taking my depression from, wow, I can't believe that this happened to me, to now thinking the worst of, is this going to pass me by? If I don't work for a full year, is that going to be like a red flag where now I'm going to be like a casualty of this? There were so many thoughts that went through my head at that time. And ultimately, it just made me feel worse of, I just don't really understand why this is happening. I felt like I had a bright future. I kept kind of climbing, and now I feel pretty stagnant. I'm just working some jobs here and there, and it was really hard. But once March rolled around, there was an opportunity with the Coastal Athletic Association, where I work now, for a very unique job. There was a big sense of me entering this landscape where I was open to going anywhere in the country for a great opportunity. But because of my injuries and not knowing if I could get another tumor at any point in time, it was important for me to stay somewhat local, just for that peace of mind to know that I'm not going to move hundreds of miles away, at least in this short-term time, and not know what is next in terms of my health. So that's why I ultimately took this job, was because it was a great opportunity, but it was also fully remote. So that then meant that I could stay here in Buffalo, then travel for all of our different championships and opportunities with the conference, but then also work as a freelancer still with all of the great connections that I have here in the Buffalo area. So at the time, it just felt really, really great. And my job is very fulfilling right now. I'm the director of creative content and multimedia reporter for our schools. And I was just so eager to start something and show what I could do. And I think in this role, I've been able to show a lot of creativity, thinking outside the box, instilling different original content series, but also then collaborating with all of the schools that are in our conference and all of the programs that are underneath that. And even though I'm remote, still try to come up with other ways for good and consistent coverage for our conference overall. Something that I also did underestimate, because I would say I was a little desperate when I initially got this job, was how hard it would be to work remotely and then also work for a conference. And what I mean by both of those things is I am a people person. I am someone who has loved and enjoyed in all of my previous experience working with an actual team or an organization or just being in school, right? So now in my day-to-day life, I don't necessarily have a lot of those same interactions with coworkers because I just see them on a computer screen, and that is hard. But also from the conference perspective, you don't have a lot of those same relationships with the schools, because when you're working inside of an organization or a team, you can promote from within. Whereas this, it is a little bit harder because you are almost a third party and you're trying to do everything you possibly can. But some athletic departments are a little bit more well-suited than others. They have additional hands. They can answer emails faster. They can help with interviews or getting me other content, where other ones are just trying to do whatever they can to make sure that their stuff gets out. And I don't hold that against them whatsoever. But I started that job in March. I had a great end of the spring where there was a lot of travel involved, and I started to feel like myself again, which I'm so thankful for. Once the summer hit, it was very refreshing for me overall. In my personal life, I got to see my girlfriend more, where we do long distance, but also get to be outside, get cleared for golf again, and be around other people like my friends and my family, and be able to travel due to having flexibility with this job. And in college sports, not a whole lot goes on in the summer. So it was a great time for me to reconvene, to be able to do a lot of the things that I haven't been able to do for the past year, and also start to shift my focus into the fall and how I can continue to take this role to the next level. So that's what I've ultimately done since our fall sports season has started. But I will be fully honest that some days are entirely harder than others. It's still a huge adjustment for me to work remotely. During the summer, I also didn't have additional broadcasts to work or teams to be with. So that's something that I'm really looking forward to, is to be able to have a little bit more on my schedule from doing freelance opportunities, but then also starting to get to travel soon in my day-to-day job. It is a grind every single day. I think that mental health is something that is now very important to me. I've never, up until this past year, really had any struggles with mental health, and it's something that I'm very open with now. And I hope that if you are experiencing any of the feelings that I feel, sometimes on a daily basis, life is very, very hard. And regardless if I'm best friends with you or if you're listening to this podcast and you're just finding out who I am for the first time, I will always be there for anybody else who is struggling or needs somebody by their side or feels a sense of connection because you're going through the same thing in life or with work. or stuck kind of professionally, because it is hard. Life is hard. And that's something that this last year has taught me. And trying to find other ways of happiness and to make yourself feel fulfilled is another reason why I'm starting this podcast. So that's a little bit about me. I know that I rambled extensively, and if you made it through this whole thing, I promise that these podcasts will be talking about other people than myself, and I truly do believe that it will be rewarding for everybody involved to hear about some high-profile individuals as athletes, as coaches, as broadcasters, people who are in the sports realm or media realm, and how they've dealt with difficult times and how they've came out on the other side. I want this to be very empowering. I want it to be informative, and I want it to be something that other people than just myself look forward to each and every week. So thank you for listening to episode 1. Episode 2 will be coming shortly.